The Fan on Demand.
Bunch of children in here. Wilner, Mike Wilner and Shai Davidi join us for our Jays Roundtable. Wilner, you throw like J.P. Arencibia.
J.P. Arencibia was above average at catching runners trying to steal last year.
By what?
Not this year.
Oh, last year. Yes. Yeah, well, we don't want to talk about last year. I mean, what other way to start our end-of-season roundtable than with a slag at J.P. Arencibia, right?
Why not?
Mike, I figure that's what you're going to be doing most of the afternoon.
Well, I'm going to start with Shai Davidi. Name me a worse season by an athlete you have seen in person.
I don't think I have one. You know, I mean, there maybe been portions that have been really bad. I think Josh Towers the year after his extension, that wasn't good at all. But I mean, collectively, like, I mean, you take April aside. I mean, what was it? It's a 5-something OPS after April 24th. All the defensive issues, unneeded drama. I mean, that's about as nightmarish a 5 months as you'll see an athlete have.
We've had. I'm trying to rack my brain because I'm sure that there were Maple Leafs in the 80s and dozens of them that had worse.
I don't know.
Not
and get as much playing time.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. But
it's the prominence of his role.
It's the fact that he was, and I was going over yesterday when, if I can do a quick plug here, we'll put my Sportsnet.ca column up of the Blue Jays postseason award or end of season award winners.
Please tell me he didn't win an award.
No. But looking through all the things that Edwin did, and all the categories in which Edwin led the team, JP was second in at bats on the Blue Jays this year. They gave the second most at bats all season
to their
guy
worst player,
who was hitting 190.
That pretty much sums up the Blue Jays season. In all honesty, it is the end of season roundtable. Mike Wilner, Shai Davidi, and Jeff Blair. Actually, that's not true. Look, I think any discussion of this season, guys, starts with the starting rotation. I know Alex Anthopoulos only mentioned that about 38 times yesterday. But all you have to do is look at the ERA when the team won 11 in a row and look at the ERA among the starters, and look at the ERA the rest of the year. I mean, it improved a little bit down the stretch. But by and large, this team, Mike, I'll start with you. This team just didn't pitch as well as it needed to, did it?
Not at all. Not even remotely close. And I would suggest, too, that not only do you look at the ERA during the 11-game win streak, but you look at the innings pitched by the starting pitchers over the 11-game win streak, because they were routinely going 7-8. And the rest of the season, the starter, other than R.A. Dickey and Mark Burley, going into last week, it may have changed. It may not have, because just completely because of Todd Redmond yesterday. But the starters other than Mark Burley and R.A. Dickey averaged fewer than 5 innings per start and an ERA of 5.5.
Well,
you can't have that.
And on top of that, after those two guys, Esmiel Rogers is the only other pitcher on the team to hit triple digits in innings.
Right. Esmiel Rogers had 20 starts, which was third on the team. And that's just ridiculous.
Right. And you just can't leave that much of a workload on your bullpen. And if your starter isn't getting deep into games, or if guys aren't accumulating enough innings, that means you're falling behind early. It means you're leaving a bunch of work for your bullpen to catch up. And we really saw it really hit the bullpen after the All-Star break. And that was the one thing that was kind of keeping that team together and keeping it competitive, giving them a chance to win games. And all of a sudden, you're tied in the 7th or 8th inning, and you get a guy who just doesn't have that much left, and then you're losing games that way. So it just piled on the misery. And I think it's fair the way Alex kind of kept on hitting on the starting rotation over and over and over again. But I don't think that the fix ends at the starting rotation. It has to start there, without a doubt. But there are other issues they have to address beyond that.
And I think, too, we have to remember how much the starting pitching was affected by by the fact that in the first half of the season, there was a lot of Mark DeRosa at second and Meister Esteres at third. And even Kawasaki at shortstop. I mean, that hurts your starting pitchers a lot. And to have the Blue Jays over the last 5 weeks of the season be in the top three in the major leagues in double plays turned because of Ryan Goins, I mean, that's illustrates hugely the difference that defense can make.
Yeah, but you see, I kind of take it's a Blue Jays roundtable, by the way, with Mike Wilner, Shai Davidi, and Jeff Blair. I kind of take a different approach. One of the things, and I think maybe Alex kind of referred to this, one of the things that I think was pretty obvious about this pitching staff early in the year is the ball was going to be in play a lot. And I don't know how much of the cause and effect thing starts with defense and then goes to pitching. I think the fact that the ball was in play so much really contributed to, I mean, they both go hand in hand, right? But I think that the fact that the ball was in play so much really just kind of magnified the defensive deficiencies. And I thought it was really telling yesterday when Alex essentially said, and we know Alex is a guy who likes to walk the line between being a numbers guy and a quote unquote old school guy. I found it really telling, and I'd like both you guys to comment on this, that he kind of went out of his way during that one answer to talk about, we've got to reevaluate defense in a different way in this team. I thought that was really telling.
Yeah, and then on the television broadcast,
he
didn't come talk to us.
On the television broadcast, he said to Buck very clearly that if I have to sacrifice offense at some positions to improve the defense, I'll do that. And I don't think we would have heard that from him.
You can only do that at a finite, very finite number of positions.
I think he was talking about second base.
And maybe possibly catcher.
And maybe catcher. Yeah.
And, you know, he said something similar to me last month or earlier this month when I did a piece on where the club was most defensively deficient. But the other thing that I thought was interesting was not only that point, was the fact that they didn't really take the turf into account when they were evaluating on defense. And I know there's a feeling among some players that the turf has been getting progressively faster over each year as it gets packed down a little harder. It becomes faster. The ball starts moving a little bit more aggressively. And I don't know if there's a substantial difference from last year to this year, but we saw a lot of really good defenders. I mean, Brandon Crawford comes to mind.
Yeah, remember when the Giants came
Evan,
back?
Evan Longoria.
Evan Longoria on Friday.
Yep.
And have real trouble with ground balls there. And so if you get a guy who's average at best on grass, Emilio Bonifacio and Meister Esteres come to mind, they get on that faster surface. Their margin for error isn't good. They haven't played on it. They aren't used to it. That's something that the Blue Jays didn't account for. And that's on the front office. And at least they seem to be recognizing that and are going to, in theory, make an adjustment on that. But it's certainly going to cut them off to more players and is going to make it a lot tougher for them to fill those holes. But the one nice thing is that Ryan Goins, there was absolutely no transition for him from grass that he plays that surface tremendously. And at worst next season, he has to be the utility guy to me.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt.
I hope, but then, you've got issues with your bench, right? Because if you want to retain Mark DeRosa, and I think they do, I don't know if he necessarily wants to, but I think they do, then that's one spot on your bench. The backup catcher's another spot on your bench. Goins is a spot on your bench. And you're paying Meister Esteres $3 million a year. You have to figure out if someone will take that. You're going to need a Rajay Davis type. Whether it's probably not going to be Rajay, I'm assuming, but whether they have Anthony Gose as a fourth outfielder and they've considered that, then there's your bench. And there is no offense on that bench again.
No, and the other thing, too, that, just kind of looking ahead to the roster last year, I think you have to pick up Adam Lind's option based on what we saw this year.
I think if you do, and I agree with you.
But I'm just going
to
say,
I think he has to be paired with an absolute lefty destroyer.
Yeah. But if you do that, then you just have
a spot on your bench.
But you've also got Melky Cabrera. Like, do you
that lefty killer has to be your fourth outfielder, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know where.
Unless you play Encarnacion on the field and then have someone else DH, maybe Cabrera comes in as your DH and Anthony Gose plays left field.
But we're talking about against left-handed pitching, right? Because that's where Lynn has to sit. And that's, you know, unless if you could bring in a Johnny Gomes type who can play left against lefties and kill them, even though he didn't crush them this year. There are guys like that. I think corner outfield lefty mashers are abundant in the wild, and you can find them. And that has to be your platoon mate, but that takes Ghost out of the equation, or it takes Goins out of the equation. And people will note that not once have we mentioned Munenori Kawasaki's name, because thank it God. Doesn't appear that there's any room for him, unfortunately.
Unless it's a AAA's depth guy.
Right. And so that's how you bring Adam Lind back. If you pair him with a lefty crusher, and in combination, you can have a DH with an OPS of 950.
Although the one possibility, and I think this is quite possible, I think that option is getting picked up, or they're renegotiating a deal. There's too much value in that option for the Blue Jays not to pick it up. But I can very much envision a scenario where that option gets picked up and Adam Lind gets dealt. And that's an asset they're not going to give up. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one way that you maybe change things up and address some of those other issues.
And value-wise, I don't know. You guys are both smarter than me, so maybe you can figure this one out. But
probably not.
He's cheaper to the Blue Jays than he is to any other team, right? Because for the Blue Jays, it's a $7 million option, but it's a $2 million buyout.
Right.
So for the Jays, it's only $5 million. But for anybody else, it's the whole seven.
The other point that's even more important on that is that the way they do their accounting, that $2 million buyout is on this year's books. So he's a $5 million player for them next year. I don't know that you're getting that kind of production for $5 million.
Right.
No, and I mean, I think Mike is right. You have to, and this is part of the, I guess, part of the issue for the Jays. You've got to make a call on that option before the player market is actually fully developed, right? And
don't they have to make a call within 3 days of the World Series?
It's 5 days after the World
Series. 5 days after the World Series. So the player market
won't. Let me mention the name that all our listeners are thinking of now, or some of them, and ask you boys what you think. Justin Morneau comes cheaper than Adam Lind. Is that a guy you prefer?
You know what? Based on what I've seen from...
You were just in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, he's got no power left, guys. He's got no power left. I might take Adam Lind over him.
Yeah, I think both guys come with injury concerns. Adam Lind with the back, Justin Morneau with everything. And you know what? Morneau's a great guy. I think he gives you more in the clubhouse than Lind will give you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit more of a leadership component there. But I don't know that it's wise to go from one kind of health risk guy to another health risk guy. And to that end, when Alex said yesterday that they're going to really start taking into account and managing more the health risks that they get in the players they acquire, to me, that almost rules out a guy like Morneau.
Yeah, I would think so. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about whether or not we in the media or the people around the Jays oversold the team going into this year. And in addition to talking about what's gone wrong with this team, we're going to talk a little bit about what went right. There were some things, and we'll also look ahead to next year as well. This is the end of season Blue Jays Roundtable on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We are back with the end-of-season Blue Jays Roundtable on the Jeff Blair Show. Don't forget, by the way, at 11 o'clock, we'll be going live to the Raptors news conference. Drake is going to be named global ambassador for the Raptors. So I'm joined by Mike Wilner and Shai Davidi. Who should the Jays hire as their global ambassador? Mike?
Geddy Lee?
I don't know. A lot of the guys would be really pumped at Drake, judging by how many of them use him for walkout music.
I was thinking, yeah. Maybe Drake could get
it. You don't want Drake to spread himself too thin, though.
No, that's true. That's true. You don't want that. So yesterday at the end-of-season news conference, several things. I actually thought Alex was a lot more expansive than a lot of people gave him credit for, but...
I left after 45 minutes to get on the radio, so I missed the last hour.
I ended up sitting down when he did his impromptu scrum. I just left the tape recorder there and sat down because I was getting tired. But I thought he was a lot more expansive than I thought he'd be. I'm not certain there was as much spinning as I thought there'd be, which I give Alex credit for that. But that kind of raises a point. I want to ask both you guys this. First of all, do you think Alex misread? Try to stay awake, Mike.
Sorry.
It's all right.
It's
do
been
you
a
think
long year.
It has been.
Today was supposed to be a day off.
That's okay.
I got to work tonight.
Do you think Alex misread how close this team was during the offseason? And actually, I'll start with Shy this time. Did he put too much faith in this core, do you think?
I don't know if it's that. I think the Marlins deal presented him an opportunity to do three things he very much wanted to. He wanted Jose Reyes forever. And he could get two high-quality starting pitchers. One of them gave him a good season, one of them didn't.
Really didn't.
And as much as we look back now and say, what a disaster Emilio Bonifacio was, this is a guy who not only the Blue Jays, but lots of teams have been coveting for years and years and years. So you look at that package and you think, all right, even if we give up a lot of future and maybe if our core isn't quite ready, these guys can help us at least give us a reasonable shot and paper over some of our other shortcomings. Mm. But, you know, I mean, there was a point in April where it was like everybody on the 25-man roster was terrible, which is an impossibility, you know?
Except for Reyes.
Until
he got hurt, he was in like 400.
Right, but that was 10 games and, you know.
But he was the standout of not terribleness at the beginning of the season.
Mm. Right, for 10 games. And then, you know, he disappeared and then everything else went to hell. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that you could have envisioned or prepared for how badly things went. Now, maybe to me, the primary miscalculation, and there was probably no way that you were going to address this, was the layer of depth in pitching at AAA. That rather, you know, I mean, next year, if everything goes to plan, they're going to have Drabek and Hutchison and Stroman and Nolan and maybe Romero, depending on what happens with him, McGuire, Jenkins, guys who can really step in and give you some quality and who can actually be parts of the future rather than the stopgap guys that they had to use this year. And the fact that Aaron Laffey made a start in April and Ramon Ortiz was the next guy they turned to, I mean, that is where the shortcoming of this team was revealed.
But you know what I find interesting, back to the question of, mm-hmm. of did he overshoot, you look at the Blue Jays in 2012, and their biggest offensive deficiencies were in left field, at second base, and at shortstop. Those were the three that were horrible offensively.
Yeah, way below
league average. Of them were addressed, right? Yeah. Kelly Johnson was striking out like a madman, set a Blue Jays record. So they bring in a guy with a K rate of 9% and a career average of about .275, puts a ball in play, doesn't walk much, doesn't strike out, fix second base. Mm-hmm. You bring in Melky Cabrera. You didn't know about this tumor thing that was going to make him run around left field like a 60-year-old who needs a hip replacement, but they fix left field, they thought. And obviously they bring in Jose Reyes to fix shortstop. I thought the things, you know, when Alex looked at the team, or at least what he told us, was that he saw that at the end of July 2012, the Blue Jays were two games out of a playoff spot and leading the major leagues in runs scored. They were the first team to 500 runs in 2012, and then everybody got hurt and everything went to hell. So what was he counting on this year? He was counting on Colby Rasmus having a good year, Edwin Encarnacion having a second consecutive good year, Brett Laurie getting back to being where he should be, and adding to that with starting pitching and fixing those three spots. All the question marks that were already here were answered positively with the exception of J.P. Arencibia. Mm-hmm. It was the new guys who didn't get the job done or got hurt or both. And so that's why I think he struck at the right time because, A, like Shai said, it allowed him to get Reyes, and that this was the only winter that was going to happen. And two, the people that he was counting on internally to be better actually were.
And let's throw this out there. Nobody, I don't think, envisioned Brandon, and maybe we should have. Maybe we should have looked at Brandon Morrow and not put him in as the guy who by the end of the year was going to be the ace of this team. And maybe we fell in love with this stuff, but
I think we did. And you mentioned all the balls in play. You know, when you start the season with with Dickey, who had 200 strikeouts last year, Morrow and Johnson, you're not supposed to have a lot of balls.
No, right. That's very true. And to me, that is the, you know, and again, this gets back to the starting rotation, however you want to parse things. Josh Johnson and Brandon Morrow. This is why I kind of defend Alex when people bring this up, because I say, who the hell out there thought that Brandon Morrow was going to have the year that he had?
Did they combine, what, for four wins?
Yeah.
Johnson and
Morrow? I believe four wins, yeah.
And I mean, more importantly, that was it. Was
Morrow had 10
starts and Johnson 16 or whatever.
Yeah, and how many Johnsons he didn't get through
right,
four innings.
Right, that's what killed him. And, you know, I think the one of the most pivotal stretches where things went wrong was after the 11-game win streak. They went to Tampa. You're going to cool off. They lost two of three. Dickey had that complete game, two-hitter.
Yep.
And, you know, Reyes just returned. Everything looked bright. They go to Boston. First game, Wong gets blasted, doesn't get out of the second inning.
Yep.
Next game, Johnson gets blasted, doesn't get out of the third inning, whatever it was. And all of a sudden, the rotation
I think it was second, third, fourth, the first three starts. The first starter didn't get out of the – Esmiel didn't get out of the fourth or something.
No,
like
Rodgers had – that was the only game they won in that series.
There was a run. Or maybe it was the other game then.
I think it was the Sunday. Right.
And I think –
But they went 9-17 after the 11-game win streak.
Well, and that's and the thing that was
against teams they were trying to catch.
Yeah,
right.
And the thing is maddening.
And Shai said in August that the road trip through Tampa and Boston that the Blue Jays had in August was the one they should have had in July.
Right.
At the end of the winning streak. And then things might have been okay.
And I think the thing that really kind of frustrates a lot of people too is that collapse kind of coincided with Reyes coming back. You know, you would think winning streak. We got this going. Jose Reyes is coming back. I mean, I can remember looking at that and thinking, this is really lining up pretty well here. They won without Reyes. Now they're getting Reyes back.
But again, it coincided with the subsequent departure of the two guys who helped stabilize things in Wong and Johnson. And, you know, I mean, everyone kind of looked at Wong as this mirage and how long is it going to last? But you're thinking, okay, well, if he can just, you know, just paper it over until Happer Morrow comes back. And then both those guys ended up taking longer than expected, and Morrow didn't come back at all. That killed them. They had that stability in the rotation. Boom, it disappears, and then all the trouble resets itself.
Yeah, and Wong got so badly exposed after just three starts. I mean, you paper over, but you need to be able to paper over for longer than 2 weeks. And after those first three starts, and the first one wasn't even that good in Chicago. But then he had two fantastic starts.
The one
and then
against Texas was
it was unbelievable. The one in
against
Texas
against a good lineup,
and then he didn't get out of the second inning ever again.
It is the end of season roundtable in the Jeff Blair Show. Mike Wilner and Shai Davidi. All right, guys. So you've got to sell tickets for next year. What's your marketing pitch to an extremely skeptical public, Mike? What's your pitch to them?
I don't have an off-season pitch, because the only thing I can say to them is, look, we'll show you this time. You showed us last year. We will show you. But that means you got to wait till April till we actually start winning some games. I don't think that anybody is no matter what the Blue Jays do this offseason. I said it on the Blue Jays talk yesterday. They could exhume Babe Ruth and Ted Williams, and people would be, yeah, you know what, we'll see. And they have every right to be that way. I think it's going to be an incredibly skeptical fan base. I don't think the off-season marketing, I just can't imagine that people are going to buy in until they win on the field. And I understand it. It's unfortunate. But after last winter, and you went into the break saying, did we oversell it? Mm-hmm. I don't think we did. There was about 85% of the national baseball writers in the States picked the Blue Jays in the playoffs. This wasn't a Rogers Sportsnet thing.
Vegas had them as the favorites going the day that spring training started. They were the Vegas favorites.
Even more than that, not only, you know, pundits and fans and everybody overestimate things, a lot of players who know what's going on, you know, made the mistake too. You know, Darren Oliver wasn't coming back unless they made that kind of buildup. And he looked at it and thought, okay, we got a chance to win. Mark DeRosa doesn't sign here.
Yes.
He doesn't look and think, okay, we got a chance to win. Melky Cabrera doesn't sign here if he's like, okay, we got a chance to win. R.A. Dickey doesn't approve that trade and sign an extension if he didn't believe in it. So this was a lot of people got this wrong. And not just the Blue Jays front office, not just pundits, not just fans. Everyone looked at this and thought, this is going to work out. They're 74-88 isn't going to happen. And it did.
Were you surprised, Mike, that John Gibbons was given a public vote of confidence as early as he received it?
No. And in fact, I remember in Houston going up to Alex Anthopoulos and saying, look, I'm getting a dozen phone calls a night, fire Gibby, fire Gibby, fire Gibby. And I'm steadfast that he's coming back and that you can't pin this on him. Am I going to look like an idiot at the end of the day? And Alex said, it's not Gibby's fault our whole outfield's on the DL. It's not Gibby's fault that our starting pitching is the worst ERA in the major leagues. He's not doing anything wrong. And I firmly believe that to be true. I mean, when you look at him as a tactician, he's, I don't want to say flawless, but far more often than not, he's pulling the right string. Whether there's anything on the other end of that string, that's not up to him. But he's putting the right guys in the right positions at the right times. And that's all a manager can do.
Yeah, the in-game management, if you compare it last year with Farrell, I mean, even this year, there have been a couple games when the Blue Jays were in Boston. And one, Farrell, incredibly predictable, you know, squeezing guys from third base and things like that. But, you know, there are a lot of decisions like, well, why is he going to that guy? Or why is he making that move? And with Gibbons, there are times you're like, I'm not sure about that one. But I think for the most part, you get a feeling that, yeah, that's probably the right move. To me, where you look at some of the stuff between the seams that really hurt this team are, did they do enough of the right things in spring training? And that's not solely on him. I think he gave a lot of guys some leeway, and because it's a veteran club, and maybe that some of the players didn't necessarily deserve it or have it earned. But he treated them like men and said, you guys know what to do. You need to be you're going to be responsible to do whatever it takes to get yourself ready. And maybe you needed to be a little bit tighter there. And my belief is that there are going to be changes, like a much different spring training from the entire coaching staff next year.
Yeah, I and my sense is that there are going to be a lot of veterans making the trip to Fort Myers this year. For exhibition games.
None of them did last year.
I think the days are gone where it's, 12:30 tee times on days that the Jays are in Fort Myers. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk a little bit about the baseball playoffs as well. Texas and Tampa tonight. A play-in to the play-in game.
Live on Sportsnet, the Fan 590.
Live on Sportsnet, the Fan 590. You doing a pre-in?
I think it's a four-minute pre-game.
Four-minute
We got Raceline Radio at 7, and I think the game starts at 8:07. So there's going to be a 3 or 4 minute pregame, and then we'll do a post.
All right, we'll talk about that when we come back. This is the Jays end of season roundtable on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Learn a lot of stuff when we're off the air. With all the stuff you just said off the air, Shai, tell me now.
Where do you want to start?
Colby Rasmus, outfield quarterback. Who would have thought it?
Yeah, no, that's one of the interesting things. And little, I mean, you mentioned you want to talk about some of the things that are right. One of the little success stories, I mean, one thing that Dwayne Murphy did with the outfielders this year is he gave, for the most part, control of positioning to the center fielder. And that was Rasmus. And then when he was hurt, it was Anthony Gose. And basically they had the scouting reports, which said, okay, this is the general vicinity that you can play. But he gave Rasmus the responsibility to read how the pitcher was doing that day, how guys were swinging and reacting to the guy's stuff, what he was featuring. And then he and Batista and Cabrera, when he was there, whoever was in left field, would adjust accordingly. He'd say, he'd shade guys over if he wanted to play in a certain spot. And, you know, for the most part, Rasmus had a very good defensive season.
You're ruining my perception of Rasmus. This is awful.
There's a lot going on there. A lot of people like to dismiss him.
Who dismisses him?
Because he talk funny and stuff.
Because he eats possum?
But there's a lot going on there. Yeah. I got a ton of time for Colby Rasmus. I think he's a smart, smart guy.
I certainly look if they're gonna offer him a multi-year contract. I mean, I have no problem with Colby.
But with Hunter Pence just got, I think the Blue Jays are now out of the market for multi-year. That's
a silly contract, Hunter Pence. But anyhow, that's
a real market changer in a very bad way.
Yeah. But that aside, if they want to bring Colby Rasmus back, you will hear no
really
discouraging words from this corner of Colby Rasmus. Wow. There's too many other issues in this team, frankly. And you're right. Look, Colby Rasmus, all kidding aside, Colby Rasmus, I don't think was an issue this year. His strikeouts were an issue when J.P.R. and Sebu was striking out. There was a stretch there where it was seemed like they were in a nightly competition to see who could strike out
in April
the most often.
At the end of April, I think they were both on pace to strike out more than 300 times.
But Colby's defense, I mean, the numbers bear it out. And even just people around baseball, you hear them talk about Colby a little different. That was one of the things that really went well this year. I mean, there were a few. Look, I'll tell you what, when they brought R.A. Dickey over here, I thought, you know, this is just not going to work out. This guy's so full of himself. He's going to be the guy that's going to be requesting a trade in 2 months. He's going to be unhappy. He seems to have figured out how to pitch at the Rogers Center. We'll leave aside the dome, the roof open and closed for a second. But he seems to be pretty comfortable here. And I don't think he'll ever be an ace. But you know what? Based on his second half, I'll take that. In the American League East, I'll absolutely take that second half that he had.
I'll take his second half. I'll take Mark Burley's last two-thirds, yeah. Absolutely. And what Alex said in the Wednesday in Baltimore when he did the impromptu 35-minute scrum prior to the yesterday's hour and a half, he said, you know, maybe it's not going to be about getting a one and a two and then three fours. Maybe you can have five mid guys and be okay. And I think Dickey and Burley are a little bit better than mid guys. They're mm-hmm. not aces. Burley's not an ace anymore. And Dickey may be, I mean, you never know with that pitch, right? But as long as you have five guys who will take the ball and stay relatively healthy and get you into the seventh inning, they don't have to be stars, I don't think, to be okay on your pitching staff.
Look, I thought the bullpen answered a lot of questions. We won't go into next year saying that it's the weakness of the team. I mean, I think Brett Laurie to me looks like a different kid than he was at the start of the year, let alone the end of last season. He almost doesn't look like a kid anymore. I mean, you watch him play and I almost get the sense that that's a professional athlete out there, and I didn't always have that sense. We talked about Ryan Goins. You know, Jose Reyes, healthy, might even hit a triple next year. Cupboard isn't entirely bare here.
Oh, not even close to bare here. This team, I honestly believe, is tweaks away from being really, really good as opposed to complete overhaul away from being really, really good.
I still think it needs two starting pitchers. But
I think that with what they've got, I'm expecting a ton from Kyle Drabek next year. I look at those rehab numbers with the four walks in 30-something innings in the minor leagues, and I think that Kyle Drabek's going to be fine in the rotation next year. Shai's going nowhere.
I don't know that you should go into next season banking on that. And you may have to. They may have to. I don't know. But I'm with Jeff. I think they need two starting pitchers. I don't know that you can rely on J-Hap or Esmil Rogers or Todd Redmond.
I'm not planning on having any of those guys to be much more than
swing guys.
And I don't know.
I think one of those guys is the long reliever next year.
One of
the
those guys
two
is
the
swing man.
Team.
Right. But I mean, I look at who needs a bounce, and this is where I kind of differ a little bit with Alex. Alex talked about, well, look at the Red Sox last year and the bounce back they got this year. With all due respect, I don't see John Lester on the Jays, you know, the guys the Jays are expecting to bounce back. I don't see John
Ricky
Lester.
That would have been Ricky Romero this year.
Right? John Lester in 2012 and Ricky Romero had really similar.
Yeah,
years.
But I don't.
Ricky
think,
didn't bounce back.
I don't
Lester
think
did.
Anybody would mistake their stuff. I think Lester's stuff was far, far superior
to
Ricky Romero.
2 years ago, we were talking about how Ricky's stuff
was
off
the
charts.
They're very similar guys. Their
charts.
Contracts were based on each other. It was Lester, Gallardo, and Romero were the comps for that contract.
I don't think you can go into the year expecting four guys to bounce back. You have to assume that between Morrow, Drabek, and Hutcherson, one of them is going to get hurt. I think you have to, as a precaution, you have to take that approach. If you're the Jays, you have to say one of these guys is going to get hurt. One of them is just not going to be good enough. And if that doesn't happen, then that's great. Then you come out of spring training with, you know, a great rotation and a bunch of pieces you can move. But I think if you're Alex, you go after go after Tanaka. And
the
because
money he's going to cost, really?
You know what? It's only money, and he's better than what they got. Go after him, trade for another starter. Then you go into camp like that. And if Morrow comes back, great. If Romero comes back, great. Now you got other pieces to move. But I think that has to be Alex's approach.
You know what? There's a lot in what you said there that it is bang on. And, you know, what to think that Drabek and Hutchison are going to go come back from Tommy John surgery and all of a sudden, all right, go 180 innings, unless this team changes philosophy and how they handle their pitchers. I mean, those guys are both coming with inning caps next year. So I don't know what you're getting out of either of those guys. Unless, of course, they're going to take off the reins and stop babying their pitchers, which remains to be seen.
Maybe two of them equal one starting pitcher then for you next year.
Right, but then you still have – that still leaves you with two other spots.
Right. One of whom is Morrow, who you're right, you cannot count on to stay healthy.
So maybe that's half a spot. Maybe you get 15 starts. But there's just way too much doubt and if there to not go and get a couple guys. And I don't know if it's Tanaka. I don't know. Maybe it's Ervin Santana. Maybe. But you need – another steady guy.
Maybe it's Gallardo.
But you know, if you're trading, and sorry to cut you off, but
sure you are.
You already drained the asset pool last winter, and you still have some guys you can move in the farm system. But they're a couple deals away from becoming the Angels and the Phillies,
yeah,
with no prospect and a veteran old team that you're not going to have guys who are going to turn over.
And I think maybe, Mike, I want to get to the playoffs in a minute, but I think maybe the most frustrating thing to me about this year, and I think we're probably on, I mean, injuries aside and all that, is I kind of went along with John Gibbons in spring training. I looked at Meiser as tourists. This is not a young team. This is a bunch of guys who should know how to prepare, mm-hmm, for a season.
Sure.
They shouldn't need the manager telling them that they got to do an extra infield drill today because that's what we're doing.
Right.
And that, to me, is the most disappointing thing, is I saw a team that looked at times like a bunch of kids out there. And we're talking about 29, 30-year-old guys.
I think the guy that stood out to us the most in spring training was Bonifacio, because he couldn't make the throw from second,
yeah,
to first. And none of us could believe that was going on. But I didn't get that sense in spring training. And maybe it was because it was so disjointed with everybody gone for so long. And then Lori got hurt at the end of March. That it was so relaxed. I thought, like you, it was a veteran team. These guys know what they're doing, and they'll be ready. And
I remember one point before the game started, a bunch of us were there at the fields, and they were just wrapped up their workouts, and all of a sudden guys were heading over to the buses, and we're just like, what, they're done already? Mm. And we're like, this is very different from the way it was under Farrell. And I think we asked Gibby about it. He said, well, hey, these guys know what they're doing. You know, I'm not going to babysit them. They've done this before. He treated them like men, and maybe they didn't deserve it.
Before I get your take on the postseason, very quickly, Jose Bautista back here next year?
Yeah, just because, I mean, I think they'd be willing to dangle him, but I don't think you can get the value that you need when he's missed the second half of 2 years in a row.
Yeah, I agree that the teams that are most likely to take him on aren't going to give you the type of major league ready pieces that you need to make that deal.
Just to be different, I'm going to say that he's traded.
Just to be different.
No, I'm thinking for a while he's probably going to, I think they'll be able to get something for him based on how this market's going to develop. We've got about a minute here.
His contract is really attractive now with Pence.
His contract is extremely attractive right now. The postseason coming up very quickly. Who's going to be in the World Series? Who wins? Come on, make a prediction.
Here's the problem, Jeffrey Blair. The problem is that the way baseball's playoffs are set up, the things that make a team successful over 162 games have almost nothing to do with the things that make it successful.
Make a call. No one's going to remind you of it.
I'm still hearing 7 years later. You know what? I would love to. I think Detroit's got strength in starting pitching, and they've got Miguel Cabrera and all that stuff, and it wouldn't surprise me if they got back in there. I think that Pittsburgh is a great story. I think they might get knocked out tomorrow, mm-hmm, though, or Wednesday, because they swept the Reds. Atlanta's been too good too long. St. Louis is always. I'll say St. Louis, because they always wind up doing something. And Yeah, all right. Detroit was the first
team. There you
go.
St. Louis over Detroit.
Let's go. I say Dodgers over Oakland, but this is partly my my hope that there's not a lot of travel in the World Series.
I see John Farrell getting doused with champagne as the Boston Red Sox win the World Series.
How about Boston and Pittsburgh and Travis Snyder walks out for the Pirates?
Boston Red Sox will win the World Series and they'll beat the Dodgers in the World Series. There you go. Guys, thanks so much for doing this. Thanks a lot for your help all year. I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about in the offseason. Thank you for doing this. That concludes the Blue Jays Roundtable. When we come back, we'll get you set up for the Raptors news conference. Drake is going to help rebrand the Raptors. That ahead on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.